Chapter 5. Dissolution. Material organization has its value and peril. After this material form of cohesion and fellowship has accomplished its end, continued organization retards spiritual growth and should be laid off. Mary Baker Eddy, 1889. July 1st, 1889, the due date on the church lot mortgage came and went, with no effort made by the membership to meet the obligation. Some time earlier, the mother had foreseen this probability and had protected her children's investment by purchasing the mortgage. In the last paragraph of a letter written to the clerk of the church on July 24th, she stated, "Now I own your church lot for a meeting house, and I want the sums collected for building put into the work at once. You can trust me with the land until you pay for it. Go to building soon as possible." Children tend to absorb all a mother's efforts with no thought whatever of indebtedness, and the children of the mother in Israel were no different. It would appear that even though they had failed to keep their land, they had no appreciation of the fact that she had saved it for them and were determined to go their own material way. With no followers heeding her advice, the leader instructed her attorney, Baxter Perry, to follow normal foreclosure proceedings on the mortgage she held. On the 1st of August, the lot was advertised for sale at public auction, and the church was notified of the sale. But the children were still remiss, and no church member even showed up at the auction sale. Once again, the mother came to the rescue. She had her attorney's son bid in the lot at $5,000. 3 days later, on August 6th, the mortgage was foreclosed and title passed from the Christian Science Church to George Perry. The church needed purifying and spiritualizing, and so did the teaching. Dr. Foster Eddy had not been able to replace Mrs. Eddy satisfactorily as teacher at the college. No mortal could, but another try was made. On the 14th of September, General Erastus N. Bates was appointed president and sole teacher of the college. He taught one primary class in the fall of 1889, but God was guiding the footsteps of the founder in another direction. Early in October, Mrs. Eddy responded to a letter from some of the members of her church who were still endeavoring to build God's temple by material means. October 8, 1889. Dear student, your letter astounds me. I do not own the land for a church site, but have put it into honest hands for you to redeem. I shall never pay another dollar to be squandered by my students or to maintain or support an organized church. This conclusion is God-guided. If you will allow the lot on Falmouth Street to be sold, you shall have the money you have put into it refunded to you. I have saved it for you, but the church has never recognized my service. This chastening letter was followed by an essay from the leader's pen, which stated in part, "Material Church Activity." Are you a Christian Scientist? Oh, yes. Let us examine. Do you believe in the existence of mortal mind, or a mind disintegrated from the one mind, God, its conceptions of law, justice, mercy, and truth as valid and important to your own well-being and the welfare of the race and the methods of mortal mind? Oh no. Let us examine. Do you exercise more faith in God's feeding you, clothing you, or making you a place in the world such as you desire? Have you any more faith in God peopling the universe with man and giving you the objects of your affection than you ever had before? Have you any more faith in obtaining money to build a church, in maintaining your means and God's power to hold this money secure to the ends whereof it is obtained? Have you any more faith in sustaining His church without organization and personal combinations in thought and effort, ways and means to maintain this church in spiritual organization and through thought consecrated to good, to love, and to the might and supremacy of mind to do all things in order? Oh yes, let us examine. If you really do believe there is no mortal or erring mind, then as a rational being, you would suppress the manifestation of this falsity. You would hold in abeyance its sensation, emotion, volition. You would say to its every impulse, quote, "Get thee behind me, Satan, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of man," end quote, "that are of mortal mind and proceed not from immortal truth and love." If this is not your mental attitude relative to this question and its answer, then you do believe in another mind other than God, believe in its actuality, necessity, rights, and modes of action. Believing thus, you will cater to the law of mortal mind, its civil, social, and religious codes of law. You will adhere to these and you will have one master, for you cannot have two masters. You will search the occasion for these laws. You will insist that they shall be adhered to and demand this adherence from others. You will piously believe and declare that this is rendering to Caesar the things that are his. And so it is. The Christian Scientist has one master, even Christ, truth, the unerring mind and spiritual ruler of the universe. This mind so governs his affections, faith, and allegiance that he reflects Christ, and this gives him dominion over the earth. This dominion is through mind, not matter. It is the true sense of things and not the false. The abiding sense of supply, safety, and success, even the justice, mercy, and faith that is the substance of all he hopes for and can attain. This scientist becomes a ruler over all things, for God good has made him this. He has no more occasion to doubt the result of his position, for he is working out the purposes of God good in the way of his appointing, than he has reason for disputing the supremacy of right and the helplessness of wrong, or to doubt the superior efficacy of truth over error in healing the sick, the superior power of mind over inanimate drugs, unintelligent hygienic laws, and faith in matter being superior to faith in God. He is benefiting himself and the world, almost involuntarily. This moral power is as superior for success in business as in healing the sick, destroying disease, its cause and effect, antecedent and subsequent. Which do you prefer for your master, a smart man or a smart God? No church edifice, no building fund, no money in banks will stand or is secure without the power back of the earthly thrones, which is enthroned upon God. Mortals are mutable. You cannot trust them because they cannot trust themselves. There is no basis for either trust. Therefore, as trustees, they must be environed and imbued with simplicity, meekness, purity, or else sooner or later they must be caught and fall into the meshes of their own error and the snare of the fowler. The smartest businessman is not scientifically a safe businessman. He is not as smart as God, while he thinks himself smarter and is quite unconscious of this thought. If you have more faith in establishing Christ's church by material organization than upon the spiritual rock of Christ, then you build upon matter instead of spirit. Build upon sand. Personal combinations, human thought and effort, material ways and means whereby to establish and maintain the Church of Christ are weak, vacillating, temporal, subject to divisions, factions, feuds, and all the etc. of mortal and material phenomena. The Church created, founded, and erected on the rock against which the winds and waves prevail not, is the church triumphant, the indwelling temple of God. It is the mind that has consecrated its affections, its aims, ambitions, hopes, joys, and fruition in spirit, whose methods and means, plans and successes are secure. They cannot be separated from success. God is their principle and is supreme. He doeth his own will. None can stay his hand, and his methods manifest will all be sound, square, legal, honest, decent, and in order. This model, Christian Scientist, is the sharpest, the surest, the most successful businessman or businesswoman that this earth can afford. Christian Scientists, what is your model? What is your model businessman? He who begins with political economy, human plans, legal speculations, and ends with them, dust to dust, or the real scientist who plants in mind God, who sows in mind and reaps in mind? It is probable that the following incident occurred while the essay on material church activity was in the writing. Many sincere students were endeavoring to practice Christian Science, but the distance between their leader's spiritual footsteps and their own feeble practice was so great that more often than not, they did not understand her. When she decided to close her college, three of her ablest helpers decided that she lacked business ability and needed the benefit of masculine experience and advice. The two Bateses, Edward P. and General Erastus, who were not related, together with the new pastor, Lanson P. Norcross, who had recently come to Boston from Oconto, Wisconsin, at Mrs. Eddy's bidding, discussed the situation with Julia Bartlett. Miss Bartlett recalled, "In the year 1889, when our teacher had decided to close the Massachusetts Metaphysical College at the height of its prosperity, there were those among her students who did not see the wisdom of this move, and three of the number consulted as to what should be done. One of these was considered a successful businessman. Another was a general of Civil War fame, and the third was our pastor. They said, as far as spiritual things were concerned, there was no question as to our teacher's judgment and ability. But in matters of business, it was not expected she would understand, and to close the college when a large number were only waiting the opportunity to enter was to them a great mistake, and they decided it was their duty to go to Concord and advise her what to do. Accordingly, on the day appointed, the three men went to 62 North State Street, Concord, where Mrs. Eddy then resided, and asked to see her. They were told she was busy, but would see them soon. When she entered the room, she sat down and had a few minutes' conversation with them, which opened their eyes and their understanding. When she was through, she turned to one and asked what it was he wished to see her about. He hesitated, not knowing what to say, and replied, "Oh, nothing in particular." She then turned to the next one and asked him what it was he wanted, and he said the same, that there was nothing, and so said the third. And as they related this occurrence to me, they said they would have been glad if the floor had opened and let them down out of sight. Their own lack was uncovered, and they were ashamed of the step they had taken. Surely the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. Needless to say, no voice was raised in opposition to Mrs. Eddy's purpose at the special meeting of the Board of the Metaphysical College Corporation on the 29th of October. The published statement of their proceedings ended with these words, "After due deliberation and earnest discussion, it was unanimously voted that as all debts of the corporation have been paid, it is deemed best to dissolve this corporation, and the same is hereby dissolved. C. A. Fry, Clerk." In a letter to the Boston Traveler, Mrs. Eddy notified the public of her desire to revise Science and Health, and in order to do this, I must stop teaching. The work that needs to be done, and which God calls me to do outside my college work, if left undone, might hinder the progress of our cause more than my teaching could advance it. Therefore, I leave all for Christ. More than a year earlier, on the 5th of September in 1888, Mrs. Eddy had resigned from the Christian Scientist Association. On the 28th of the following May, she had resigned the pastorate of her church. In June of 1889, she had given her flourishing enterprise, the Christian Science Journal, to the National Christian Scientist Association, about the same time that the records of the CSA, which had been held hostage for a year by the dissidents, were redeemed. This redemption had been accomplished by issuing undeserved letters of dismission to the faithless students, who then went their way to oblivion. On the 23rd of September in 89, the leader had written to her college association, the CSA, "Beloved students, I have faithfully sought the direction of divine wisdom in my advice herein given, namely, that you vote today to dissolve this organization. Third, because it is more in accord with Christian Science for you to unite on the basis of love and meet together in bonds of affection from unselfish motives and the purpose to benefit each other and honor the cause. Therefore, I strongly recommend this method alone of continuing without organization the meeting together of the students of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College." On that day, the students voted to continue meeting on the first Wednesday of each month, after which they unanimously adopted Mrs. Eddy's communication, quote, "by which act the Christian Scientist Association of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College was dissolved at 3:10 p.m. End quote. All of this followed by the dissolving of her college a month later left the students in a quandary. But they had faith in their leader's spiritual vision and were willing to follow her instructions, even as she was ever willing to follow God's guidance. There were times when she knew no better than her followers why a certain course should be taken. But she was a Minuteman for God, always ready to pursue the path pointed out by divine intelligence. The wisdom of these moves was always made known to her in time. Nonetheless, the way she must pursue, the trail she must blaze during this period of disorganization often loomed before her as an unfathomable sea. Did this vision in mid-November give her guidance or determination? Vision of November 14th, 1889. I saw water before me and knew that I must go across it. I saw a narrow place in the channel that I thought it possible for me to get over by jumping from point to point of land. But on examination, found the sod soft and without foundation. There appeared my father, who had passed away many years ago. He called to me to wait, and he would take me over the water. Then the water seemed to broaden and seemed boundless, and he disappeared in their depths, all but the head, which was above water. Then he came towards me with a boat and a pillow in it. I seemed to be sick, and he said, "Get into my boat and lie on this pillow, and I will go with you over the water." Then the vision was gone. She did know that she must cross this unfathomed sea. But how? The way that looked passable was foundationless and would not bear the weight. To return to the outgrown ways of her father's religion, which comforted sickness rather than healing it, caused the waters to broaden and become boundless. The professed methods of Christianity offered no solution to the problem, but the discoverer of Christian Science must found her discovery on the rock. Step by step, she was finding the way through the severe chastisements of principle. Quote, "For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth." End quote. In a poet's words, when nature wants to make a man to do the future's will, how she often disappoints whom she sacredly anoints. With what wisdom she will hide him, never minding what betide him. Though his genius sob with slighting and his pride may not forget, bids him struggle harder yet, makes him lonely, so that only God's high messages shall reach him, so that she may surely teach him what the hierarchy planned. Before the end of November, the leader outlined another major step in a letter to her church. November 28, 1889. Dear brethren, the Church of Christ Scientist in Boston was my patient 7 years. When I would think she was well nigh healed, a relapse came, and a large portion of her flock would forsake the better portion and betake themselves to the world's various hospitals for the cure of moral maladies. These straying sheep would either set up claims of improvements on Christian Science and oppose the Mother Church, or sink out of sight in religious history. This state of the church has lasted 10 years. It even grew rapidly worse when about 3 years ago I, for lack of time to adjust her continual difficulties and a conscientious purpose to labor in higher fields and broader ways for the advancement of the glorious hope of Christian Science, put students in my pulpit. This and much more of a severe nature caused me, as the mother of this church, to ask earnestly, what shall she do to be saved? And I think God has answered me and bidden her to disorganize, saying, I will try her and prove her on the pure basis of spiritual bonds, loving the brethren, keeping peace, and pursuing it. I will test her love, which seeketh not its own, but another's good, is not puffed up, is not easily provoked, envieth not, doth not behave herself unseemly, beareth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. And if she is saved as a church, it will be on this basis alone. As one who is treating patients without success remembers that they are depending on material hygiene, consulting their own organizations, and thus leaning on matter instead of spirit, saith to those relapsing patients, now quit your material props and leave all for Christ, spiritual power, and you will recover. So I admonish this church, after 10 years of sad experience in material bonds, to cast them off and cast her net on the spiritual side of Christianity, to drop all material rules, whereby to regulate Christ, Christianity, and adopt alone the golden rule for unification, progress, and a better example as the Mother Church. When this is done, I have already caused to be deeded to those who shall build a church edifice, the lot of land designed for the site of such an edifice, and which is now valued at $15,000. This offer is made on condition that the question of disorganization shall be settled by affirmative vote at the annual meeting of this church, held December 2nd, 1889. Please read in Science and Health, page 92, paragraph 5. The hearts of the main body of this beloved church are trying to be right in the sight of God. And for this and their faithful devotion as Christians, I send them at this time the assurance of my abiding love and fellowship. Mary B. G. Eddy. In the 42nd edition of Science and Health, printed in 1889, the fifth paragraph on page 92 reads, "As the crude footprints of the past lose themselves in the dissolving paths of the present, we should understand the science that governs these results and plant our footsteps on firmer ground. Every so-called pleasure of sense gains a higher or lower definition with the lapse of time. This unfolding should be painless progress, attended by love and peace instead of envy and pride." This time the church members were ready to follow their leader's advice. There was no dissenting voice in the vote to dissolve, and Mrs. Eddy was notified of their action. But more than a week elapsed before they heard from her again. December 11th, 1889. My dear student, should have thanked you sooner for your faithful discharge of duty, but am busy getting things right and made strong. Many scientists know that on the 10th of December, Mrs. Eddy had the church lot deeded to her student, Ira O. Knapp, her Peter, the rock upon which she could build her church. But few students know what she did 3 days earlier. This letter to her student, Mrs. Sarah H. Cross, the leader of the 88 Rebellion, is self-explanatory. Concord, December 7th, 1889. Dear student, I find, contrary to my expectations, that I cannot deed the lot of land on the corner of Falmouth and Caledonia Streets to those in the church who started the building fund, which it was my intention to do. So I have done the next best thing, as I desire to deal with all alike. Have advertised in tonight's Boston Herald the lot for sale to anyone who was a member of my church when that lot was bargained for. This is to give you a chance to purchase it at a reduced price. I do not and will not make 1 cent out of it myself. That was not my object in purchasing, but it was to save it for those who, as well as myself, had put money into it and lost. As ever, M. B. G. Eddy. Ira Knapp had been instructed to buy the lot on Monday afternoon, if Mrs. Cross's contingent had not already done so. But because Attorney Perry failed to follow instructions, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Sarah Cross again. December 10th, 1889. Dear student, Mr. P. did not advertise the lot of land that I wrote you about in Sunday Herald as I requested, but in the Monday Herald. It had a purchaser in the afternoon of that day. But before it is deeded, I meant to give you a chance to buy it, if you wish, and will let me know by return of mail. As ever, your teacher, Mary B. G. Eddy. A month later, Mrs. Eddy made still another generous offer to those who had left her church and declaimed against her so bitterly. This time, the letter was addressed to Sarah's husband. January 15, 1890. Mr. Charles Cross, if you want the land for a church building on corner of Falmouth and Caledonia Streets, please let me know, and I will get it for you if these parties, Mr. Knapp and the trustees, Mr. Lang, Mr. Monroe, and Nixon, will let me have it, as one has said he will. Write me how or in what terms you will take it. Answer at once. In haste, your teacher, M. B. G. Eddy. The Crosses did not avail themselves of their teacher's offer, and she did not expect them to. But she was still the teacher setting an example of returning good for evil while fortifying her footsteps. By the end of 1889, the students in Boston were once again eager about building an edifice, but the true building of the Church of Christ Scientist at that time, even as today, was found in the dissolution of organization. The central theme of the church's experience in 1889 had been dissolution, a dissolving of all the material bonds that would hold Christ's church in the grasp of matter. The members had taken measures to follow their leader's advice about dissolving the church, but they understood not the import of this momentous step. Even though they experienced the blessings pursuant to their action of casting off material organization, they were unaware of this spiritual progress, the dissolving paths they had followed to plant their footsteps on firmer ground in a higher definition of Christ's church was seen and understood by the leader alone. Lest the import of this hour be lost, Mrs. Eddy wrote of the results of the measure they adopted. This measure was immediately followed by a great revival of mutual love, prosperity, and spiritual power. The history of that hour holds this true record. Adding to its ranks and influence, this spiritually organized Church of Christ Scientist in Boston still goes on. A new light broke in upon it, and more beautiful became the garments of her who, quote, bringeth good tidings that publisheth peace, end quote.